Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Tyler Barrett, 8 years of career experience, third generation firefighter, an engineer on Rescue 1 for Savannah Fire Department in Georgia. Tyler never had the career notions of becoming a firefighter. She always was around sports and in college played D2 basketball, transitioned to coaching, and along the way obtained her master's degree in sports medicine. But Tyler felt like she wanted to do more. Her father mentioned joining the fire service, and with that, everything seemed to click in place and Tyler never looked back. Once in, Tyler had mentors that helped shape her viewpoint and mindset towards being a better version of herself. We all need to have someone in our lives to help push out that inner positive being within us to truly allow ourselves to leave the service better than we found it. With that, I present Tyler Barrett.
Good morning. My name is Tyler Barrett. I'm a fire engineer with Savannah Fire Department located in Savannah, Georgia. I've been with Savannah Fire for a little over 8 years now. We are a full-time career department. Originally, I was born in New York, and back in 2005, my family moved down from a smaller town in New York. We're about 40 minutes north of the city to Richmond Hill, which is just right outside of the city of Savannah. And while we lived in New York, growing up, my dad was a police officer. And so it had pretty much been around the public safety scene and first responders my entire life. But, when it was time for me to graduate high school and grow up a little bit, I ended up going to Mars Hill College up in North Carolina. And I played Division II basketball 2 years up there, and then ended up transferring to Armstrong State, which is located here in Savannah. Now it's Georgia Southern, and they merged several years ago. But I, always grew up around sports and just being a very active kid. I love being a part of something bigger, than what's going on. And so a little bit of background. A lot of my family still lives, immediate family lives here in Savannah. Relatives and all that are up in New York. I love New York, but living in South Georgia, I don't think I'd ever move back, but that's a little bit about me. I'm an avid runner. I also run a nonprofit here in Savannah. We give back to first responder military families. Just living life. I'm trying to be better every day. So,
okay. So how do you go from Division II basketball to fire service?
It's a good question. I don't really have any, fancy story behind that. But, I played basketball for 4 years, and then I ended up coaching for two at the college that I got my bachelor's from. So the plan, I thought I had my entire plan laid out. I was going to graduate and then get into coaching and, not saying I'd be a Division I Geno Auriemma type college coach, but I wanted to coach in college. And I did that for 2 years. And then I began working on my master's. And so I do have a master's degree in sports medicine with a focus on strength and conditioning. And I used that to pretty much transition from a college basketball coach, so a sport coach, to strength and conditioning. And there was a 3-year period where I did the coaching. I had an awesome internship opportunity at Wofford College, right in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And, I love being able to be a mentor on the court, off the court, and be able to help these athletes grow and develop, learn about themselves. Really enjoyed it. But I got to a point after that internship, when I came back to school to finish my master's, that I just felt like driven to do something more. And at the time, I went back and forth between maybe the military, looking at different branches and whatnot, and sat down one day with my parents and I was like, yeah, I don't know if I want to continue doing this coaching, very long hours. And you really have to be committed and love what you're doing, which I did. But I felt like I needed to do something more, for those around me and the community. And my dad was on the fire department at the time. So he went from police to fire when we moved from New York to Georgia. And he's like, well, have you thought about the fire department? And to be honest with you, Danny, like I really hadn't. We went to the station every year for the holidays, and we're always hanging out and jumping on the truck, playing around with the gear, things like that. But I never really considered it until he said that. And I started looking into the process as far as, the CPAT, which is what we use as a physical test, entry level physical test here. Started, down the YouTube rabbit hole of all these firefighting videos, and I was like, that is freaking awesome. Like, that is what I want to do. It looked hard. It looked like a challenge, and it just pulled me in, and started preparing for the CPAT. I actually was three I had 3 months left of my master's when I started the academy. So like Monday through Friday was the academy, and then Saturday, Sunday was my master's program. And so I was able to kind of tag team. It was a lot of work, I'm not gonna lie to you, but the day that I had to defend my thesis, so all the research I did for my master's, was actually the night that we had our burn night. So it was kind of like this awesome day of, knock out school, be done with that, and then I was full go. Everything with the academy just kept rolling. And I mean, people say it all the time, it's the best job in the world, but unless you're doing it, like, you really don't understand how awesome the job is, being in the fire service. And I think my background with athletics and being a part of a team, I needed that. When I decided to go from coaching to the fire service, I mean, you go from one team to the next, you just kind of mold right back in. And yeah, so that's essentially how I got into the fire service.
Okay. And so what was it with all the videos that you saw and everything that you knew about it upon getting in, like actually hitting the ground, was it everything you thought it would be?
Yeah, I think kind of the biggest eye opener, which it's funny looking at it now, from the perspective I'm in, but when you're watching all these videos, you're like, oh man, like people fight fire every day. They're running calls all the time. And what I didn't realize, and of course, like I had conversations with my dad and many family friends that had been on the job as well for a while, but I didn't realize that, there was this whole other side of the fire service, which is that community engagement and, doing apparatus displays or different events and, being involved in a lot of other activities that were not just running calls, fire, medical, whatever it is. And especially now, the station that I'm assigned to is headquarters. So we're located right downtown Savannah. We have people every day coming by, tourists walking by, they want to get a shirt, they want a station tour. But it really is a big part of the job is just engaging with the community and, being able to interact with them on a day that it's not their worst day or, there's not an emergency. But you don't see that in the videos either. The videos are all, firefighting this and, medical calls and, bad accidents and rescues and different things like that, which, again, I love working for Savannah because we get a mixture of everything. We do not run EMS. We do not transport, right? So the county handles our medical. We do have nine types of calls that we run, your kind of hot priority calls, right? So unconscious, CPR, overdose, shooting out, like this, the good, I don't want to say good stuff. It's not good, but the things that require immediate attention. We're not running like I stub my toe or my stomach hurts, anything like that. But definitely get a taste of all of it here in Savannah, and that's just something that I really appreciate, knowing that when I was thinking like firefighters, we're gonna fight fire every day, fires aren't so hot anymore every single day because building construction and fire alarm systems and things that have reduced the amount of fires that we see, which is a great thing too. But that was probably the biggest thing that maybe I anticipated to be a little more. But other than that, everything was pretty accurate, looking at helmet cams, going into structure fires and, extrications, water rescues, things like that. It's all pretty real.
Okay. And I'm assuming you had to do, well, you mentioned it. So, what was your recruit academy like? How long was it? And did it kind of like overwhelm you, or were you up for that challenge?
Yeah, so our academy, we started in March of 2017, and then we graduated in June, the end of June, so of the same year, June of 2017. Something different with our academy, and it kind of varies based on like what the department needs, right? So the few classes prior to mine, Hazmat Tech was a certification that they were required to get. And my class was the first one that they did not put us through Hazmat Tech. You know, we had a I don't want to say a surplus, but we had a lot of Hazmat Techs that adding that extra week, 2 weeks of training for that certification, they did away with that. And then you look at two classes after mine was when we started putting EMT in the academy. And of course, like, you know, natural progression, like the department is moving towards potentially everybody being an EMT and maybe a little more of the medical responsibilities. But, you know, my class was pretty short and sweet. I mean, we did fire one, fire two, hazmat ops and awareness. You know, and it wasn't the biggest thing for me as far as the academy was just being on a different schedule, you know, waking up extremely early, going extremely late, and of course the double team of personally doing my master's with the academy, just trying to balance the workload. Physically, I mean, we all know going through academy, it will wear on you, it's tiring, you know, but something that I think I feel like I had a pretty good advantage was understanding my health and wellness and how important it was, and recovery and rest and taking care of my body. And that's something that I preach to this day. I'm pretty involved with our peer fitness team, and you know, just making sure, you know, firefighters and recruits and the guys I'm working with, like, we all understand, like, your body's all you got. You know, you got to keep it healthy mentally and physically. And so in the academy, that was something that I think I had a little bit of an advantage. You know, but don't get me wrong, like there were days that you're dog tired, and you know, somebody forgot something, so now we're doing towers or you know, things like that. But it was a really great experience. We had an awesome cadre instructing us. We ended up, I want to say we had 25 to start, and then we graduated with 23, so we lost two. And you know, it's that's kind of like the first step, you know, of your journey in the fire service is the academy, no matter where you go. And it really laid a good foundation for me, so I was very appreciative of that.
Awesome. Now, for those that don't know about Savannah, I can say I've been to Savannah. Me and my wife went there a few years ago. Actually, she was pregnant at the time. Lovely city. It was super hot, and I think she was very uncomfortable with that. But like the tours that you can take, the food, just the whole experience of Savannah, there's lots of things to do. And I do remember hearing trucks going up and down the road. So for those that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about your department, the size, how many stations? It doesn't have to be exact, things of that nature.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we as of last week, we have 16 stations on paper. So our station number 16, they're in the process of finishing up the temporary structures. We do have engine 16, you know, running calls. They're sleeping at a different station right now, but they're still out in their district, all that. We have expanded tremendously in the last, I mean, even just since I've been on. We've acquired a lot of different land and different property that we've annexed into the city. But we have 16 stations, about 300 uniform personnel. We're getting ready to have another recruit class, an academy start in November. So we'll bring 24, roughly 24 more candidates on board. And you know, call volume, I think it was about 2020 was when we added that list of like 9 medical calls that we run. The first year alone, we had probably 2 or 3,000 more calls. So last year, and I just got these numbers. I wanted to make sure I was accurate, but last year we ran about 14,000 calls. And currently this year we're at 10. You know, so some of our busier stations will run, you know, it could be on the upward of like double digits for calls. The weekends and especially the summer months, which, you know, you come in here as a tourist, like you saw it. It gets pretty crazy. You know, we have SCAD, which is one of the, I mean, it's they own a lot of property in the city, Savannah College of Art and Design, And so there's a lot of movement, a lot of people. We have the river, the Savannah River, which we do run, a dozen or so calls throughout the year, just in the river that's pretty much right off of River Street. So a couple blocks north, the river separates Georgia and South Carolina. We have the Talmadge Bridge. So yeah, we're just constantly growing. They're talking about two more stations probably in the next 5 to 7 years. And constantly growing, keeping busy. But it's definitely a beautiful city, and it is really hot.
Yes,
The
okay.
humidity is no it's no joke
It's
here.
no
It's something
joke.
that we yeah, I mean we the good thing is if like you go anywhere else and people are like, oh, it's gonna be hot this weekend, you're like, it's not gonna be hot. Like it actually feels cool,
Right.
But it is a beautiful city. We have a lot of the downtown area is a lot of multi-story Victorian types of structures. The West Battalion is all kind of our commercial warehouses and things like that. South Battalion, a lot of residential, malls, plazas, restaurants. But we get our fair share. We just 2 days ago, they just had an apartment fire on the south side on the South Battalion. We have our fair share downtown too. I mean, again, going back to like simple like building construction, just how quickly things are going off and how close. Everything is very, very close in Savannah. So exposures are, more than likely, if you got one house that's like fully involved downtown, there's going to be one or two on either side just because of how close the houses are and the structures. So, yeah.
And as far as your personnel, would you guys write three, four? What's your minimum staffing?
Yeah. So, majority of our apparatus have four, which is, I don't, I think, unless, personnel that we have are like educated on other departments, like we are absolutely spoiled to have four people on an apparatus. We do have a couple of our truck companies that ride three, and there's like two engines that ride three. But for the majority of it, there's four personnel assigned to an apparatus. The thing that Savannah Fire has, again, it's a blessing, but like structure fire, you're getting 24 people off the rip. Minimum staffing, we're at 92 per shift once they I mean the station technically they're already riding those personnel on an apparatus, but 92 per shift is our minimum staffing. And that includes two heavy rescues. We have one tiller. We have 16 engine companies. We have a 56 foot fireboat. We have a 26 foot fireboat, a regional hazmat apparatus that they sometimes are going, mutual aid calls and things like that because we have the resources. But yeah, so that's about all on Savannah Fire.
And
Yeah.
how many ladders again did you say?
So we have five, let's see, we got truck one, truck two, truck 12, truck 13, and truck five. So five, yeah. And truck 16 isn't in service yet, but we will have six once they put that truck in service. Yeah. And truck five is our tiller. So they're out of station five, which is right by, and you may remember Forsyth Park, beautiful park. They cover, most of the downtown. I mean, we have to have it, especially with some of the roads and streets down there. You're not getting anywhere.
Yeah, it's tight.
But so we do have the one tiller, yeah.
And I'm assuming engines do engine work and trucks do truck work.
Yeah, yes and no. The one thing that I think that Savannah does a really good job at, if you're on the engine, obviously you're gonna probably be the water supply, you're grabbing lines, stretching lines. Truck company, if they're able to go vent or do a search, that's what they're doing. And then same or forcible entry, it really just depends on the scenario, and what's happening on scene, because sometimes we have, the truck gets there before the rescue, or the rescue might get there before the truck or the engine. Everybody, I would say, on Savannah Fire is very well versed in like knowing what your role is based on when you arrive. I mean, obviously, like my apparatus, the rescue, we have water cans and extinguishers. Like that's the most water and suppression types of equipment that we have. We're just a giant toolbox. The truck companies do carry 300 gallons of water, so they do have capabilities, but everybody's kind of interchangeable. You know, obviously our RIT team, that could be anybody. Just depends when you get on scene. And again, what's needed. But Savannah does a really good job at making sure, you know, everybody knows what they're supposed to be doing when they're supposed to be doing it. But typically, yes, your engine companies, you know, they're taking lines, stretching lines inside. Trucker rescue vary between search and vent. You know, so it really just depends on what's happening.
And when a first due structural box comes in, what's Savannah's first alarm assignment complement?
So you get three engines. You get a truck company, a rescue company, a safety officer, battalion chief, and then you get hazmat two, which is essentially command aid. Yep. And then, you know, depending on what transpires, you know, how that scene is going, they might call for a task force, they might call for a strike team. So, you know, you can get another engine and truck, you can get two more engines. We've had in the last several years, and especially like the first year that I was on the floor, we had multiple second alarm fires where you're getting, you know, just as much as what you did on that first alarm. And it's crazy. I mean, you're bringing all these units and you're like, you know, who's covering the rest of the city? But we are our battalion chiefs and our chiefs, they do a really good job at communicating and make sure coverage is taken care of, you know, bringing different units closer or wherever they need to go. And even lately we had I don't know if you saw it made national news, the Eastern Wharf fire. This was probably 4 years ago, give or take. They have this whole area on the east side of Savannah, beautiful area on the river. The parking garage that was under construction went up, and I mean it was a multiple day operation. We've had some really big like wood chip pile fires, you know, car dealerships, warehouses, things like that. So we definitely get our fair share. So
Definitely. All right. So upon completion of your academy, what was your first assignment?
yeah. So again, the academies that have come out in the last few years, they've switched it up a little bit on how the rotations and different things go. When I finished the academy, my group was rotated three times in a year, so you were on probation for a year. I started out in the South Battalion on an engine company, and I was there for 4 months, and then I went to Truck Five, which was our tiller. I was there for 4 months, and then I went to the West Battalion, Engine 13, which at the time was much slower than what it is now. They're riding a lot more calls now than they were in 2017. And that's actually our station that's closest to the airport. And so we have a lot of areas that they're kind of cut up, right? So like you might go through the city of Pooler to get to Savannah, or Chatham County to get to Savannah's district. So I had a really good assignment, especially my first assignment. My captain at that time is now one of our assistant chiefs. And he was just an awesome mentor. You know, he's a really, really phenomenal leader. And so I was very lucky to be able to have him as my captain when I was on Engine 7. And then same thing, Truck 5, you know, lots of experience. Every shift, you know, we were given myself and the rookie that was on the engine, because we had two rookies, you know, on each company there. We were given kind of like a topic, and it was like, hey, you're teaching next shift. This is good. You're doing training. You're putting it on for the whole station. And so that really, you know, one, if you're able to teach something, you know, it instills that you actually know what you're talking about. And you know, two, you're building that rapport with your crew, because they're like, okay, like she knows what she's talking about, or he knows what he's talking about. And you know, so that was a great assignment. We had several extrications, couple fires, you know, my time there. And then Engine 13, again, a little bit slower. And it was a hazmat company at the time. Or in ops and awareness, so you didn't have to be a tech. I tried to take up as much as I could on the hazmat stuff, but It just really wasn't my cup of tea.
Right.
So but I tried to be useful, whatever I could do to learn, and we trained on some things out there that, it again, just adding to the toolbox that, I carry with me, my invisible toolbox every day. But yeah, it really was a good rotation to have, from a moderately busy to a busy company and then a little bit slower. And I think the other part too that people maybe take for granted is like when you're going through those rotations as a probationary firefighter, not only are you getting the experience from different companies call-wise, but you're interacting with different personalities. And that's what kind of sets you up for your career, because you might deal with, you got a bunch of people that are like ready to go. Let's train every second. Let's do PT every second. And then you might go to a station where people are like, meh. And then it's like, okay, how am I going to impact and try to get them to be motivated to help me, because I'm here, I want to learn, and then you deal with a lot of different personalities, which is a great thing, because you need to know how to deal with people with our job, our fire, being in the fire service is like half the battle. So
No, that's one of the things I try to work on myself every day. Like, the good thing is I'm fortunate where I have a wife who will like tell me like it is, whether I want to hear it or not. Like, she doesn't lie. And, because what's the point? Even if you have a friend that's like that. So like she'll tell me like sometimes the way your facial expression is will make people like, can I go to him? And I'm like, I get it. I try to work on that, but I'm not the kind of guy who walks around like smiling all the time, even though I could be like, I'm good, but the face kind of shows different. But I think if people once people like get to know me after a while, they're like, oh yeah, that's just him. Like,
That's how
just
it
go up to
is.
him and just he'll tell you whatever you want to know. So I like that you brought that aspect up. And I also like the fact that the Savannah do that with every single probie. They make them rotate.
So now what they've done, and I think things will probably be, it may be a little different when this next class next year graduates, just based on like staffing needs and personnel and all that. But the last few classes have gone on a rotation from the North Battalion to the South Battalion. And so every now and then they'll flip, they'll move some people out to the West Battalion. But typically they try to keep them north and south, because that's where a lot more of the calls are. And they're just getting that experience. So I think it will probably stay very similar if I had to guess. I taught the last recruit class last year. And so we, we're able to communicate a little bit with training and our chiefs, like, hey, we kind of recommend this or recommend that. Somebody might need a little more reps, or they might need a little more calm down or whatever, but so I would imagine they'll continue on that rotation, at least two rotations during that first year.
And then, so at what point in your career did you decide to start like moving up the ranks and why?
So I think again, kind of falling back to my background and experience as an athlete, I've always enjoyed, and I say this like very humbly, but I've always enjoyed being in a role where I can assist others and inspire others and push others, right? Like kind of help people come out of their shell. I wasn't always like that. It took a few like really good leaders and people that I looked up to help bring that out of me. But I do think that over the course of playing on several teams and coaching, I knew that getting into the fire service, like every single day I was going to try to learn something. I was going to try to help somebody, bring good energy and just be that person that, like, oh, need somebody to talk to? Okay, let me go grab Tyler. Like, she's going to listen and maybe give me some good advice or not, whatever. But I think with my experience as an athlete and being a captain for several years on my basketball teams, getting into the fire service, like I knew I wanted to be somebody that was kind of in a leadership role. But obviously the fire service, absolutely respect the rank and respect having to earn that, right? Like nothing is ever given to you. So the first couple years, the firefighter and engineer and the person I am now, I was pretty quiet the first couple of years, you know, trying to understand how things played out and how things worked and, you know, where my opportunities were. And I think I got to a point where, you know, my confidence was up and I felt good about, you know, teaching and being able to instruct and, you know, continue to have a good impact on those around me. And then it just kind of progressed to, the time where I was able to test for promotion. So, I know, you know, a popular topic, if you will, but, you know, how many years do you have before you can test, if you should have any? So, Savannah Fire, but I haven't really looked a whole lot at other departments, just casual conversation, you know, but Savannah Fire, you have to have one of two things. So, a minimum of 4.5 years on the job with a college degree, or 6 years, no college, but each of those you have to have your relief driver, so your apparatus operator certification for 2 years. So you have to be a driver for two, which when you kind of break that down, like in my case, you know, I got my relief driver, I guess it was beginning year, going into year three on the job. So it was like the perfect, for me, it was like the perfect scenario. I had my probationary year behind me, still a rookie, still learning, but I was able to take driver operator, got some time behind the wheel, and it set me up for 2 years to the point when that 4.5 year mark hit, I was eligible to test. And so it, again, for me, it worked out well. We've had some guys that, you know, and personnel, they've missed the testing deadline by like a week. And they had to wait another 2 years or another year. Last few years, we have had a lot of promotional tests just because, you know, vacancies and people retiring and things like that. But I had a pretty good timeline, and I had that goal of being, when I'm able to test, if I'm ready and I feel ready, I'm gonna go test. Because worst case scenario, you know, I don't make it through, but I got the experience of being able to go through that and see what I need to improve on and do better for the next one. We do have an outside company that comes in and runs all of our assessments. So, you know, it's not just in-house stuff. There's a very intense written test. You know, there's several textbooks and policies and things that you really have to read. And then once you pass the written test, they move you on to the practical. So you do the pumping evolutions. And if you pass both of those, then you're essentially on the list, but you still have to go through an assessment center. And the assessment center is three different scenarios, one of them being a like tactical exercise, you know, you're running command. And so there's that and two other parts to it that you go through, and that ranks you on your list. So it's definitely a process. You know, you got to have X amount of years before you're eligible, and I think that's a good thing. You know, not just because it worked out for me, but in the sense that you got to have time to be a really good backseat firefighter. You have to, like that's like the foundation. You know, yeah, you need a captain, yeah, you need a driver or company officer, whatever. But being able to focus, you know, several years on being in the back and just being really good at what you do. You know, it opens up doors and makes it easier when it is time to test, you know, because you're not rushing it or you're not feeling pressured. But also with that, like, I think that having that time in between, you know, when you hit the floor to when you're getting ready to test, you know, having really good company officers, having a good crew, people that are willing to work with you and prepare you. You know, we have task booklets for classes. Obviously we have different classes that you can take, promotional classes, officer one, officer two, instructor, things like that are required as well. You do have to have certain classes before you can test, but having all that kind of laid out, it really assists with the process and, you know, makes you realize like, okay, I'm either ready for this or I'm not. So that's a little bit of how we do it here.
One thing I like that you stated that you guys do is, and this is usually a hot topic or a topic of discussion in fire services, having that educational degree piece of paper or not. But I like how you guys at least combine the both, where it's if you have it, It's shortened a little bit, but if you don't, then your years of service need to, and it's kind of like you guys are finding that balance. I'm not saying the years of service numbers are correct, but at least your organization gives the option.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's probably like one of the hardest questions, where education, years of service, experience, your work ethic, like where that plays in, because you can argue that you have a firefighter that's on the busiest engine company in the city, and they're riding hundreds of more calls than firefighter that's on, a slower company. That person might be ready to test based on their experience in 2 years or three, and that other firefighter is like 3 years behind the ball. It really, I think that's something that, we have a pretty strong union, our local here, and I think that's something that, you need people to not justify, but they have to propose why, and they have to try to get people to like, okay, that sounds great, let's try it. Nothing is set in stone. So like if you try something 1 year and it doesn't really turn out, in the best interest of the department, then try something different. But you have to have people that are pushing and fighting and say, hey, like, let's try this. But again, I mean, years of service, and experience, they don't go hand in hand. You could have 25 years and not have a lot of experience, or you could have 2 years and have a ton of experience. It just kind of is, it varies on where you're at. Do I think that education plays a role? Yes and no. I think that, like, personally speaking, going to college, staying on top of my grades, like, I had a very good, way of structuring like my schedule, and I was a little more organized because I had deadlines, I had to, read and write and critically think. Like that, I think, does help in a sense. But we have, dozens of people and personnel that don't have a college degree, and they're damn good firefighters. I mean, it's just one of those things, like moving through the times, that's kind of up to the department as far as in the cities. As far as if education is going to be a requirement or not, so I don't know, that I don't really have an answer for that. I think
No,
it
you're
could play
good.
out, yeah, and it could play out in any way you share it. You could argue for any one of those qualities being good, being not good, and it's also like what do you want to do? If you want to go back to school, or you want to get a degree. There's tons of fire science programs. There's tons of leadership programs. I've been considering going back for a master's in public administration because I want to learn more, and I want to, better myself and try to understand the big picture of the fire service and not just day to day, which obviously I still work on that every day. But it's what are your goals? Like, where do you want to be in 10 years and 15 years, and what position you want to retire in? Like, or rank do you want to retire in? That all plays into, kind of the education piece, but
No, for sure.
it's up for grabs, it's up for grabs.
Now, every organization has their pros and cons. So like, with your size organization, 16 stations, that's pretty big. And I'm sure trying to get companies in and out of your training grounds or your training center to train, it could be it's a lot of moving parts. So what kind of realistic training do you get to do with your organization?
Sure. So as of last week, they actually just demolished our training center, our burn building and our tower. And we're in the process of getting all brand new structures and I believe a new tower out there. So that's definitely going to be a game changer, I think, for the next year or so, because we don't physically have, our burn building or the tower to do training on or in. But we do have our training division. They put out, we do have monthly training, department-wide training that doesn't have to be done at a burn building or off a tower. We have thousands of structures in the city. We have thousands of areas in the city, property, etc., we can go to and train. And I think really, especially when it comes to like designing a drill or finding a drill that you're going to use, like you just need to know what equipment you need or what you have and what you can work with to be able to make it happen. At my station, we're located right downtown. We barely have enough space. We have the pad in front of the station or whatever, but we don't have any like grassy area to go set stuff up, or the bay. We have our apparatus, and then our chiefs park in the bay, and we have a little Zodiac, boat that sits in the bay just in case for water call. So, when it comes to like having enough space, some of our stations have plenty of space. They can, throw ladders, pull lines. We really can't pull lines at my station, just because of the location. But we definitely get creative and find ways, especially in-house, being on the rescue. Like just the other day, we pulled out our basket and ropes, and we were setting up systems and tying different things off and whatever. Some of that stuff you can do in-house. But our department is pretty good. I mean, there's a lot of firefighters that want to train. They want to get their hands on things, and it doesn't have to be 3 hours of training. Like we could sit down for 25 minutes, 25 minutes a day. I can't remember if I heard this on your podcast or I read it somewhere else, but 20 to 30 minutes a day, you can do something. I kind of nerd out a little bit on NIOSH reports, just because you learn so much, even though a lot of them have the tendency to have very similar, things that went wrong, if you will. But you can do a round table. Everybody sit down. We're going to talk about this report. We're going to go over some things, and let's talk about our policies and how that impacts, what happened on this scene, or district study. Get out, go drive around, go look at buildings, go look at structures, look at different streets, hydrants. Like there's so many different things you can do. You just have to really have that motivation, and your crew and your company officer has to have that motivation and that leadership to say, hey, let's go, we're going to train. It gets tough sometimes. Like, you're running calls all day, you got to go do this, you have to go do that, you still need to eat lunch. There's a lot of different things you got to do, but I don't think it's very difficult to cut out just a little bit of time every shift, and talk about training, do training. So we do try to stay on top of that. I'm really excited for our new burn building. So we can get back out there and start doing some drills and whatnot. But it'll be a little while before we get that built. So yeah.
Now, was the goal or was the goal for you to always end up on the rescue? Because like that is a, in most organizations, being on a truck designated as rescue, whatever, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever the case may be. Like to me, it's an elite position because the rescue personnel are supposed to be jack of all trades. So was that a goal you always wanted, or is that something that developed over time?
Yeah, it definitely developed over time, and I would say that over time meaning the academy. So when I started the academy, my dad's a hazmat tech kind of guy. He's been in hazmat companies pretty much his entire career. He's been on Savannah for a little over 20 years. When I started the academy, I was like, hazmat, I want to follow his footsteps, all that. And then we started doing the hazmat stuff, and I was like, this isn't my thing, like those guys, you guys are awesome. Like, keep researching chemicals. That sounds great. But for me, the chemical stuff wasn't really super interesting, and the hazardous materials and whatnot. But when we started getting into the technical rescue types of tasks, and especially, vehicle extrication when we were doing fire one and fire two, I really took a liking to that. And so once they don't allow us here to take any classes while you're on probation. Which again, I think is a great thing because you need to learn that the role as a firefighter, right? But I was able to start taking classes when I got off probation and started with ropes, took ropes, jumped into confined space, and then vehicle extrication and machinery. And then I ended up taking swift water. I'm a public safety diver, and also structural collapse, which was a lot of fun. But it's a process. Like you can't it, it's difficult. It can be done, but it's difficult to knock those classes out, in a short period of time, because each class, it might be a week, might be two, but also those skills that you learn, if you don't, the whole quote, like, you don't use it, you lose it type of thing. I mean, 100%. So when I got off probation, I was assigned to an engine company for maybe a year. And in that year, I did take the first three of my tech classes, so ropes, comm space, and vehicle machinery. And that does allow you to ride on the rescue. And so I did have some time riding on Rescue One when I was, three and a half years on. And then shortly after that, I got reassigned to Rescue Two, which covers the South Battalion. And I was on the rescue for 4 years before I got promoted to engineer and I went to an engine company. And I mean, this is all fairly new. It's been about a week that I got reassigned. I put in to go back to the rescue. And a big part of that was, like, I love being on the engine. The engine that I was on, we were actually the boat crew, so we handled all of our fire boat, water rescues, things like that. Loved it. Engine company work, it is the foundation, and the backbone of the fire service. I'm not arguing. I would never argue against that. But I really, really, really enjoyed the things that we were doing on the rescue and the skills that I learned and the different equipment that we use. And also, not being on the rescue for even just like a year and a half or a year or so, I felt like I need to go back because I need to keep these skills up and I want to keep these skills up. And being able to get your hands on all that equipment, every shift, and over time and things like that. But yeah, so I put back in to I put in to go back to the rescue. And luckily, there was an opening in my station on my shift, so I didn't go very far. I stayed with all the same guys. But I really enjoyed being on the rescue. And like I told you earlier, like, there's times where the rescue will get on scene. We might be second or third in, and they're like, "Hey, grab a backup line." Okay. So we get to do a little bit of everything. And I really was challenged with some of the, like, public safety diver. That was like a 4 to 5 month process. Like, we started in December, and we didn't really finish until like May or June, and stuff like that. I mean, we do get dive calls and things like that here. So it was really just, I wanted to get back to the rescue and keep those skills sharp. And I just enjoy what the rescue does. So
All right. And like you said, I'm also not here to argue. With some people, they like to say, well, engine work is whatever. And if you're on the truck and whatever, like, to me, everybody plays a role on the fire ground. And
absolutely.
but the thing I want people to understand too is, if you are on a rescue, like, that is the amount of stuff you have to stay up on. Like you said, if you don't
Yeah.
use it, you lose it. Like, I respect everybody that's on a rescue truck that actually is there to master their skills, not just because, oh, I want to go on that truck because they don't run medicals, or we never have to pull anything with lines. Like, you're still a
Yeah.
firefighter at heart. So
Absolutely.
I love your answer on that, 100%.
Yeah.
With that being said, listening to you talk, obviously, you have had some mentors, whether they knew it or not, and whether you knew it or not, that helped shape who you are today. So, how important is mentorship, and what does being a leader look like to you? Two-part question.
Yeah. So as far as mentorship, I mean, I think it goes for any profession, right? Like, not just the fire service, but when you're talking about athletics, when you're talking about retail, whatever kind of profession you're in, having a mentor that you trust, that you can go to when you need advice, or like we were talking about earlier, like, you need somebody to kind of put you in check sometimes. Having a mentor that is with you and guiding you, and doesn't mean you have to talk every day. It doesn't mean you have to, schedule a once a month meeting. Like, it's just having that person that, I can go to this person when I need advice or I need, some guidance. It's crucial. And, we try to do our best, I'd say, for the most part. You get in the fire service because, like, you want to serve people, whether people admit that or not. You know, I think most people, they get in because they want to help people, they want to do good. And part of that naturally is just helping the people that come on after you, or maybe there's somebody that's been on a little longer than you, and you know, you're a little more well versed in physical fitness, or you know, another area that they're not. Like, mentorship, there's really no rules to it. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be someone who's got 37 years of experience to someone who just came on. It could go both ways. But I think having a mentor, it really is a game changer. And it just helps ensure that we're doing good for the people around us, and motivating and inspiring them. You know, there's always those quotes about, like, one person trying to do something is not as effective when you have an entire team. You know what I mean? If you have seven people working on one thing, it's like as simple as like washing the rig in the morning, right? When there's three of us or four of us washing it, it gets done in 5 minutes. When you have one person washing it, it might take you 10 or 15 minutes. Like, having a mentor is kind of like that, you know, indirectly, I guess, but being able to just help people progress in life and in their career. So yeah, having a mentor is, I think it's absolutely, like, should be a requirement. You know, not forced, but definitely a requirement that we're looking to do and be for people, and also, you know, get that in return. And then your second question, so
It's pretty much what does leadership look like to you?
So I think everybody has their own type of leadership style, and there was a time where I really, like, locked in on, like, different types of leadership styles because I was curious. You know, it already had different types of leaders and company officers, but I think at the end of the day, being a leader, I mean, you have to be able, one, to be trusted, you know, one, to inspire and motivate and empower. I think that's a big one. But for me in particular, like, my actions, you know, I might not be, like, the loudest person in the room. I'm definitely a people person. Like, I can talk to anybody, you know, I love socializing and interacting and stuff like that. But when it comes to, like, being a leader, I try to show by my actions, right? So lead by example. You know, different things that I partake as far as, like, groups and committees, and you know, like I said, I'm an avid runner. Like, I try to inspire people and lead people by what I'm doing. So if I'm gonna do it and I'm trying to, you know, motivate somebody else to do it, like, they see me doing it, I'm not just sitting back like, oh, go do this, or you go do that. Like, I'm in there with you, you know? And I think that's the type of leader I am, and that's the type of leader that I find, you know, motivating for me as a role model, is like watching a company officer, you know, come in here and help with this, or lead training, or, you know, whatever the case, lead a PT session, like, whatever it is, like, watching somebody do it and just say, hey, get on my back, let's go. Like, that's the type of leader that I aspire to be. And I'm trying to do that every day, you know, naturally letting it happen. But yeah, I think, you know, leadership is just, it goes hand in hand in the fire service. Like, we have to have leaders with all these, you know, there's younger generations coming up, and you know, times are changing and stuff like that. But you got to have somebody solid that, you know, you can count on, and someone that's very professional and respectful, and they're going to do right by you. So
Definitely. And with your role as engineer, if you're company officers off, do you slide over or does someone in the back go right up?
yeah, so it just depends again on staffing and what the needs are. But typically they will have, we will have our engineer slide over and act as company officer for the day, or you know, ride in charge, whatever terminology you want to use. But I've been lucky. I like to work a lot, so I do work a good bit of overtime. And I think between the overtime and some of my normal shifts, I've had a good amount of acting up or riding in charge. And you know, it's definitely a different, it puts a different perspective, because obviously, as a driver and engineer, you know, you need to get everybody to where we're going safely. You need to be in charge of your apparatus. You know, but when you slide over, like, it's a whole new ball game, right? Because now you're talking on the radio, now you're communicating, you know, with BCs, and it's your crew, and you got to make sure everybody's good first and foremost and safe. But it definitely it definitely just kind of adds a whole other layer of of being an engineer. So
And for anybody that's in your shoes or aspiring to be like a company officer, I just want to ask you, because like for me, actually, I'm going to ask for me because I am in our lieutenants process. So we have engineers, but they reclassified it to lieutenants because the engineers slide over. So like, I'm learning, like I'm watching, like whenever I'm not relief driving, I'm sitting in the back, like I'm watching my captain, what he does, like, all right, he's looking at maps and things like that. And I'm looking at how he transfers information, gives radio reports and stuff. But like when you're actually in that seat, like I don't want to say what's it like, because I've been a volunteer before where I've rode the seat, but it's different when you're like, it's your career department, I guess, you know what I mean?
It's funny that you say that. I mean, that's like, I don't know what the word is to describe that. But I know, like, when I drive and typically I show up, I relieve the engineer from the previous shift. I do my truck checkoffs, put the truck in. If we have cleaning, we got to check the calendar, whatever. But when you slide over into that company officer role, like your mentality just like goes up like five notches, right? Because now, yes, you're still responsible for being safe and doing your job, right? That doesn't change no matter what seat you're in. Like you're supposed to do your job, right? But when you're in that company officer seat, now you have three other individuals that literally are looking to you when they have a question, or looking to you, when something's going on scene or in the station, or like you are the person they are going to, as opposed to you're just kind of in the mix of like, oh, we'll just talk to Captain so and so or whoever, I think my mentality, I love to joke around and be silly and goofy and all that, have a good time. I love going to work. I love hanging out with the guys at the station. I mean, we laugh so hard that we're crying sometimes, but when you get in that role, like everything turns a little bit more professional and responsible, because like you are that, like something goes wrong that day, like that's your crew, that's your shift for that day, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be like that any day we show up for work, but it's just this like natural, like this is yours right now, you got to take care of it, keep everybody safe, make sure we're doing what we're supposed to do. Sometimes it's like, we joke if our captains are gone, it's like, oh, like no supervision, no parents, but, and I say again, I say that very jokingly, but you're stepping up into the next role. Like your responsibilities go up. You have to be on your A game. You have to be able to communicate even more effectively than ever, because now you might have somebody in the back seat that hasn't worked with you before. Like, hey, this is what I expect. Like the other day we had a couple guys, I was on the engine for the shift, and I had two guys in the back seat that were on overtime. And it's like, hey, this is what I'm expecting when we get, if we get a fire call, if we get this type of call, if we get that type of call, you know what I mean? Like, and it definitely, you just put on a different lens, right? But that doesn't mean that you change like your personality, like you still, and listening to you and getting to know you a little bit, like you're still bringing the energy, you're still positive. You don't have to be, changing all your facial expressions, but you're still the same person. People still have to know they can trust you. You're going to respect them, and you're going to ask for the same kind of respect, but your responsibilities just change, and again, I don't know what the word is for that yet,
No, I got you.
but it's there. It's definitely, you feel it, and yeah, it's yeah, so
Your personal opinion when it comes to recruitment and retention, where do you feel like the fire service is doing good on, but where do you see where there needs to be a little bit of room for improvement?
sure. So we can see on paper, different salaries and pay and, your schedule, right? Like I could go, go somewhere right now and pick somebody out and try to recruit them and say, hey, this is our pay. We make pretty good money, especially compared to like surrounding departments, we do well. We only work 10 days a month because we're on a 24/48. Our insurance is great. We're busy, we have a good time. Like you can recruit somebody based on all the positives, and you can put stuff on paper and say, here's your pay, here's your benefits. I think that when it comes to recruiting, like you need to give the whole picture, right? Like we've had two captains in the last 5 years have passed from cancer, right? And one of them very, very close to myself and my husband, but you don't really see some of the health disadvantages, right? Your sleep, your overall health and well-being, obviously we know what we sign up for as far as like the schedule, but like just know you are gonna miss family events and you're not gonna be at, friends outings and things like that. But I think recruiting, you really have to focus on like why do you want to do this job? Like do you want to do this job because you want to wear gear all day and get dirty and break stuff and look cool because you're a firefighter, or do you want to do it because you're trying to give back and help people? And I'm not trying to have this like corny response here, but I'm not a firefighter because like I'm rich or I get paid a ton of money, like I am very, very I'm good with the amount of money I make for what I do, but I get more back from the fire service that you really can't put a price on. You can't put a value on, So when you're recruiting, I mean, you share with people and you share with potential candidates, how much you love the job and what you get out of it. And also share with them, hey, like there are things you have to do to kind of take care of yourself and take care of your family in a different way. And I think just painting that whole picture can help with recruiting. I think when in your department, like we have a pretty decent sized recruiting team, but being able to go out to different job fairs and go out to different events, and just have a conversation with people. You can look anything up online nowadays and you can see, oh, this is what the responsibilities are of a firefighter. But a lot of that doesn't tell you everything about being a firefighter, And I personally, like anywhere I go, if I'm out with friends, if I work part-time at a running store, firefighting is going to come up, I can assure you. Or try it on shoes, I'm going to tell you about what I do because I love my job. But really being able to just have that one-on-one communication and conversation with someone to explain to them, like, this is why this job is so rewarding, I think that helps with recruiting. And, of course, the pay, people do, you have to live, right? Like, money doesn't grow on trees. So that is crucial too. But again, that kind of goes back to like, is your city fighting for you? Is your department fighting for you? Do you have a union that fights and makes it known? Because everybody on the streets and civilians, like they really don't see what we do aside from like, oh, okay, they just had a fire or there's a bad wreck and now I'm sitting in traffic. Like people don't see what you actually deal with as a firefighter. And so it's just a matter of making sure everybody understands and tries to understand what the job is about. And I think that that contributes to recruiting. I think same thing with retention. How are you taking care of your people? Like how is your department taking care of us, right? I read a quote this morning and it said growth of people equals growth of company. And I mean it's like spot on with the fire service. I think it was like meant that I read that because I was talking to you today, but you take care of your people and you develop and grow your people and make sure that or like we know that we're being taken care of and looked after as firefighters and individuals. The departments, it's there's endless opportunities because I know that they're looking out for me,
Yeah, definitely.
So I think that helps with retention. And again, it's all educating, getting good information out there, making sure people know what this job is about. It's not just all, glory and going in and put fires out. Like there's stuff that isn't always so glorious about it, but making sure people know that.
What advice can you give? Well, actually, before I say that, I just want to make sure one thing. So your dad is on Savannah too, so that makes you a second generation firefighter, correct?
And actually my grandfather, so my dad's dad was a volunteer firefighter up in New York, which crazy. I didn't even know until shortly after he passed, but technically third generation. So that's definitely a cool thing, to carry with me. But my entire family, I mean, my dad's on the job, my husband's also on the job, and then my sister's a police officer. And my mom holds our family together, and my brother is an accountant, and he also holds the family together, you know. So kind of a family of police and fire, and lots of jokes back and forth and competitiveness. But yeah, it's definitely fun, you know, having at least family in the fire service, and then my sister, you know, on the other side wearing the badge.
Okay. No, that's great. That's great. Okay. My question to you is, what advice can you give to other women that are either looking to get into the fire service, or if they are already in the fire service, challenging themselves to start climbing that ladder? Because I mean, I'm going to be fully transparent. We still have individuals in the fire service today that look at women that's like, eh, they're not supposed to be here. They're not supposed to be driving fire truck. A woman captain, woman battalion chief, like all that. I don't know what it is. I think maybe it's a lack of education, honestly, that to me, anybody could be a firefighter. Because even though I'm not a woman, I can also translate it to like, you don't, at least where I'm at, there aren't very many African American, black, brown, I call myself brown firefighters, you know,
Sure.
and I knew that coming in because like historically the fire service has always been a white male dominated, you know, profession. And I get it. Like, but me, I don't see color. I
Right.
look at or gender. It's, if the person wants to do the job and they can do the job, that's great. So what advice can you give on that?
Yeah, well, and I definitely agree with you with that last statement. Like, I don't care what you are, what you like, what you do, what you don't do. Like, if you can do this job and you're committed to doing the job, let's go. You know, let's get you trained up and do it. I think the biggest advice, and again, I've been very lucky with the interactions I've had. You know, you definitely, there's some people, like you said, that they still have this kind of old school mentality, like females shouldn't be in the fire service, or they can't do this job, or can't do that, or whatever. To me, there definitely was a time where I kind of like took that, and I was like, that doesn't really make me feel good. But it was very short lived, because then I once realized, like, that's got to be motivation and fuel to keep pushing and prove people wrong. And I really, really like to do that. Prove people wrong. And so my advice, you know, for any female or anyone, you know, wherever you come from, whatever your background, it doesn't matter. If this is the job that, like, this is your dream job, and you want to be a firefighter, and you want to do this job, go for it. Like, don't let anything get in your way. Use the negativity and the comments, or the mentalities, like, use that as fuel to push you through. I think the biggest thing, and again, not just for me being a female firefighter, or for you or anything, but like, always prepare. And like, that's the physically and mentally, like, you have to prepare. If you're not prepared, whether it's to take on a physical task, or to mentally, like, hear some comments in the background because people don't think you can do it, if you're not prepared for that, then it is going to be a lot harder than if you go in with this mindset, like, have a little bit of thick skin. And I want to kind of side note, that doesn't mean that, you know, certain things that are said or done are acceptable. Like, I will say that off the rip. Like, have seen some things, heard some things. You know, you see it on the news, you read it on social media. Like, there are absolutely things that are unacceptable. Like, that's a respect thing. That's being a professional. Like, that is a whole other conversation. And there needs to be a line drawn for that. But you know, for someone who wants to do this job, get yourself ready mentally, physically. Be good at what you're doing. Be great at what you're doing. Prove people wrong, and don't let stuff like that get in your way. Because you're not going to get anywhere in life if you do, you know. We have obstacles, we have roadblocks, we have hiccups, we have road bumps. But anytime you have something that's in the way, like, just figure out a way to either go through it, go around it, go over it, go under it. Like, you got to keep going. You can't let that stuff stop you. So, and then, of course, the mentor, right? Like, you find a mentor, maybe they're in the fire service, or maybe they're completely unrelated. But having somebody to kind of remind you, like, you can do this job, and, you know, learn different skills and get certifications, like, pushing you to be better. You have that support system, and that will make things a little bit easier too when they come your way.
Absolutely. And I love the message. 100% agreed. Okay. I always like to ask the guests this last question, and that is, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
So I've been an engineer for a little over a year, about a year and a half now. I definitely have goals of promoting, through the ranks. And it's not, to me, it's not like a power thing. It's not like I want to be in charge. I really just want to be in a position where I can help other people get to where they want to get to. But I also want to leave, when the time comes, Savannah Fire a better place than when I got here.
Right.
And again, like, super generic answer. A lot of people say that, but like when I say it, I mean it. There's things that, I've implemented through different programs, leadership programs, officer things, committees, events, to just bring a better view to Savannah Fire, and I plan to continue doing that. I do plan to test for captain when the time comes and I'm eligible, and continue to build and hone in on things that are going to make me a better leader, a better firefighter, a better person. Eventually work my way up battalion chief and assistant chief, and kind of go from there. But it's really it, your goals and things like that can absolutely change too. And I learned it, from being a college basketball coach and college basketball player to now I'm a firefighter, and I do feel that like this is where I'm supposed to be. There's things that I do, and even things I do outside of the department that I genuinely feel like I'm supposed to be here. So I'm in it for the ride, and kind of whatever comes my way. But I definitely do have goals to continue to work up the ranks, and like I said, just leave things better than I found it, and however many years it is from now that I'm not going to be here, like I just want to make sure that I've done everything that I could possibly do. The time in between, that they have a there's like this little poem about the dash, like on your gravestone. They're like, not to get all like morbid here, but like that little dash like describes everything about you, like what you've done, what you've left, who you've impacted. That's something that I really think about. Like, I just want that to be impactful and positive, and maybe inspire somebody else to just pick up where, where people left off. So
And I know you said it earlier, like it sounds cliche, but I don't know one person that doesn't want to have some sort of positive change for their organization. So, like, I don't want you to think, like, that's kind of a generic answer. No, I like to ask that question because everybody's answer may tend to be different. But if you look at it collectively, everybody wants to do something to change their organization. And you've already said, you've implemented a couple different things that we need in the fire service. Like, we need fit firefighters. And I understand everybody's level of fitness is different, but like, you can't come into this job like with certain eating habits. Like, I'm gonna eat this every shift, or I'm gonna eat this at every or at different various times. 'Cause like, I look at it as, on my crew, we have a firefighter who he's 19, about to be 20. Like, he can eat those late night snacks and meals because his metabolism is burning fast. But it's like, at some point, because mine used to do that too, but when you get to a certain age, that slows down. And like, you got to start, you mentioned it, like, you got to be fit mentally, but you also got to remember you got to be fit physically. So like, I just want to say I appreciate the fact that whatever you're doing for Savannah, like, it is having an impact.
thank you. I appreciate that. And yeah, we could sit here all day and like go back and forth with like what we want to see and what we want to happen, and oh, this would be nice or that. But some of the guys give me a hard time, and I'm sure if they listen to this, they'll chuckle. But like, I will do what I need to do to try to find a way to make it happen, and there's always plan A doesn't work. Okay, what's plan B? What's plan C? You have to be persistent in what. Like, if you want something to be done, like, you have to go after it and do it, but you have to be persistent, and you can't let a no or, a failure or whatever the case stop you. Like, that is, you're never going to get anywhere. So, yeah, a lot of the programs, and like Pure Fitness is being one of them. I think the department's been every department has their ups and downs with peer fitness because it is so important to be physically fit for this job. I mean, it's almost like a 60-40, right? Like I can teach you how to pull a line. I can teach you how to throw a ladder. I can show you tips and tricks when you're doing an extrication. But being physically fit, like that's you. Like you have to do that for yourself, and it impacts every single person around you. It impacts the people we're responding to. But it is so important to physically be fit and mentally, and I can't preach that enough. But we do have a solid peer fitness team. Again, we have our ups and downs. We handle the academies for PT, so they've given us that. You guys handle the PT sessions in the morning. We collaborate with training on. We have like a master schedule, and we line up like this is our program. Let me see what you guys are doing as far as the skills, fire one, fire two, because overtraining is absolutely a thing. Improper training is absolutely a thing. Training as a sport athlete or a bodybuilder is not necessarily like we're tactical athletes. And there's a lot of stuff in the last like 5 or 6 years coming to light about tactical athletes and how to train like a firefighter, how to train like a police officer if you're in the military. Like that is so important. And we peer fitness, we try to implement that where we can. We talk about it all the time at the station. We have a very our department is pretty fit. I'm not gonna lie to you. Like you go to a station, there's workout equipment, people are always doing something. But it's so important to just take care of yourself and physically be able to do the job. If you are not fit enough to go inside, to grab a line to go inside or throw ladders or pull somebody out, not just by yourself, right? Like mind you, like I'm talking like collective group effort, but if you're not physically capable of doing that, it doesn't matter how good you are at advancing, a hose line, or you can do nice little patterns with the nozzle. Like it doesn't matter. You have to be able to get in there, do it, and then safely get out. So it's fitness is huge. It's been a pretty significant part of my entire life. I always took a lot of pride when I was a basketball player. When I was an athlete, I still play a little bit, but weekend workouts, training in the morning, weightlifting, the recovery piece, like I always took pride in that. And again, it's helped me translate over to now being a firefighter. But yeah, it's crucial. It's crucial to take care of yourself. So,
Definitely. Okay.
yeah.
With that being said, I want to thank you for accepting the invite, coming on and talking shop. It's not very many people want to do this, but like I think it's important because whether you know it or not, like there are individuals who are watching what you're doing, and they're the reason why, like Jennifer Ashdown and Jordan McNeil that mentioned your name. So, like, what I'm trying to say is, even though some people who might be in your own organization might find out or hear or see that, hey, did you hear Tyler did a podcast? Why? Like, what does she do? Like, we all have those people who don't see what we do on a shift basis, on a daily basis. You interact with your coworkers and they just be like, well, last time I saw her, she was like this, or he was like this. And it was like, obviously, what you're doing is positive because people aren't just gonna like, when I talked to Jennifer the other day, it's not like she's gonna go, hey, you know what I mean? Like, I got a person for you when she really doesn't want to recommend, if you get what I'm saying. Like, obviously, keep doing what you're doing. I see great things in you, and I don't even know you like that. But just by talking to Jennifer and talking to Jordan, and people are that understand what I'm trying to do. Like looking at you, I see another female firefighter that we have within our own department who just started, and I think that she will be a rock star. Like I think she's gonna climb up the ranks. She's gonna move up quickly, and she's gonna make that impact. So I appreciate you for coming on and talking shop, and that's pretty much it. Like, thank you for doing this because you didn't have to.
Thank you, Danny. Yeah, like we both agree. I mean, there's no shame in loving your job. There's no shame in wanting to tell everybody about it. Kind of the running joke is like you go somewhere, like how do you know they're a firefighter? Well, they're going to tell you because they love their job, right? So there's no shame in that, and I'm really honored just to be on this and talk with you. I love when people are like, "Oh, that person was on a podcast," or "Oh, that person nerded out on this." Like, absolutely, you know, I love it. I love it. But yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity, and you know, we're talking about the mentor stuff. Like, if your firefighter needs anything, send her my way. Give her my contact. I'd love to link up. You know, we didn't really get into like outside training or whatever and
Oh
different
no, go ahead,
conferences
go
and
ahead.
stuff.
Yeah, good.
Well, I just, you know, just some of the things like the one thing I know I would like to do more, and it's a schedule thing. I don't get a lot of days off, right?
Right.
Between nonprofit and I work two jobs and I'm very go, 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 go. But you know, going to different outside trainings, and there's a lot of guys in our area that, you know, I follow on social media, and I mean, they're getting it done. They're going to different events and conferences and this, that. And I think that's great because you have to have that open perspective to be able to learn from other people. They're doing stuff so different on the West Coast than we do it here in South Georgia or up north, and you know, wherever really. But I have been pretty lucky to attend a couple different conferences. One that I presented at, and just being able to be around like-minded people, you know, it really fires you up. It gets you going even more than you might already be. But it is crucial to be able to work with other people and listen to other people and hear, you know, how they do things, how different firefighters and departments and cities are handling, you know, situation scenarios. Like, there's 100 ways to skin a cat, you know. And so I think the outside training is absolutely important, but just connecting and networking with other firefighters. Hey, can you send me a policy on X, Y, and Z? I just want to see how you guys do it.
Right.
It doesn't hurt, you know. Worst you get is a no, or maybe they ignore you, but okay, cool, you
Right.
know. So absolutely open that door for your firefighter. Anything to help, you know, that's what I want to be here for. So.
Okay. One thing before we wrap up. Hopefully I'm not opening Pandora's box, so I'm just gonna kind of crack it open a little bit.
Okay.
Has Savannah ever thought about a different schedule? Because I mean, I know areas around you are looking at it, and some have actually gone to it. Has that? Because to me, and I'm gonna be 100% transparent. Like I've worked was a 24/48 for 16, no, almost 17 ish change years, right? Back in February, we went to 4896. I was totally against it. I'm not saying I'm 100% like on board with it. I just, as firemen, we learn to adapt. We don't like change. You know, we don't like the way things stay the same. Like, so that. But I'll say the freedom that 4 days off gives to people where, hey, I can go work here, or I can go to this conference. If I take this shift off, I can have this X amount of days. Has that been a discussion in your organization?
Yeah, we had a survey type of thing
Okay.
go out,
Okay.
and this was last year. So this was when like 4896 had like sadly kind of just hit our area, if you will. And it was brought up. There was a proposal, if you will. There was some information circulating. I think the biggest thing, at least with our department, was maybe how the information was presented or lack thereof. Like, like if it were me, right? And I've done this with, I was telling you about the girls' camp I run here, Camp Ignite. Like, created my proposal, pitched the idea, followed up on the idea, made sure everybody was aware and informed on what it was and why I wanted to do it, why we should do it as a department and a city. I think if 4896 schedule was presented just a little bit different, I think there would have been maybe more feedback or better feedback. I'm indifferent on it. A lot of my friends out west, Colorado, Florida, you know, everybody's kind of moving. Well, out west has been doing 4896, but you know, you look at it and I've heard nothing but people that have gone to it, they love it. They don't want to go back. Selfishly for me, you know, like I mentioned, my husband's on the job as well. We're both on the same shift. We're in different battalions, but our schedules line up. And
Okay.
we have two dogs. They're knocked out right behind me here on the floor. You know, our biggest obstacle would be probably coverage for the dogs. You know, we work overtime all the time. He's actually
Right.
working overtime right now. So the 48 part, being at the station for 40 hours, that doesn't bother me, doesn't bother him. You know, that is okay. Everybody has, you know, their different thing. They have kids or they have
Right.
their own business. We have a lot of
Gotcha.
guys that have their own businesses, and that change in their schedule, like we don't like change, but we don't want it to stay the same. You know, I think it's one of those things where if we did a trial, it might take some time. There might be an adjustment period. I think people would like it because, like you said, you get those 4 days off. It allows you to do really whatever you want in 4 days. Instead of like right now, you get off one day, or that first day you're off might be a recovery day. You might have to sleep for like 5 hours. You know, my station is very busy on the weekends, so like Saturday morning or Sunday morning, it's kind of a wash, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I think it was visited once. I think in the next, you know, year or so, I could see it being brought back up. I'll tell you the schedule that I'm really drawn to, and I know it would be logistically, there would have to be some changes, you know, because we only have three shifts.
Right.
24/72
2472. Yeah.
sounds perfect to me. But I think again that with the amount of personnel we have, the stations we have, our minimum staffing, like there's a lot of logistics behind that. And then of course you look at your pay and if that changes, you know, with your hourly and stuff. 24/72 I think is a really good recruiting tool. You know, you're working one day, you get three off,
Right.
and I think that's great. You know, there's also that 1323 that Portland, and we actually have like I think there's a department just outside of Atlanta that just started that, or maybe Charleston, I think, is getting ready to start it
Yeah, I
for a
think so.
trial.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound that bad either, you know. Again, I think case by case, you're gonna have, you know, so many people that like it and want to do it, so many people that don't want to do it. They have like a year left. Why change it now? But I think that's the beauty of like when you're the fire chief, or you know, you're within the city where you can implement it. So trial will never hurt. Do the trial. If the people say do it, your department votes yes, your firefighters love it, like go for it. If not, okay, at least we tried, you know. I'm indifferent, you know. I'm indifferent about it. I do like the thought of a 24/72, but you know, if things were to change, okay, they change, we adapt, we figure it out. If they don't change, then you know,
Just keep on
I keep
moving.
doing what I'm doing, you
Right.
know. So yeah, it's we have right now we have two departments for sure that are on 4896 within the surrounding area, and then I think there's one more closer to us that is getting ready to start a
Okay.
trial.
Okay.
So it's yeah, it's interesting, but that the schedule, that schedule topic, I mean, there's so many different avenues that we could
Yeah.
talk about, you know,
Yeah.
sleep, vacation time, swaps, like you said, the pros and cons, the being able to go to conferences and classes, and like our department's pretty good about, you know, if you put in for a class and you want to go somewhere, like they'll try to find a way to get you there. You know, but it does open up a lot of doors when you have more days off. You
Right,
know, mentally,
right.
physically, I think it could be beneficial for firefighters for sure.
Yeah.
And
And
studies show that, you know, so.
absolutely. And like I said, I wasn't trying to like start. And that's the thing, people be like, oh, why'd you like? I like to have discussions and conversations because
Yeah.
I like I said, I tell people I wasn't for it.
Yeah.
If you ask right now, if I had to vote like right now, would I go back to 2448? I'd tell you no, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because of the
Yeah.
fact of, like you said, if you every station is going to have their busy station, their days that they don't run anything, but whatever the case is, when you get off, like if I got off this morning, it's like, all right, I got off this morning. If I'm tired, then you know I might take a nap. But then it's just like that next day, you're just prepping to go back in.
Right back.
So
Yeah.
you really never. Unless your department doesn't run anything at all at night, like you really
Yeah.
never get to recover, and it's just you never really get that break. So, coming
Yeah.
from experience, I could tell you I wasn't a fan, but I can say I do appreciate how that how having that 4 days does kind of help balance. Like if I'm tired, I can get some rest, and then I'm ready
Sure.
to go back to work. You know what I mean? So
Yeah,
that's all I
yeah.
just wanted to talk about.
Yeah, no, it's a great topic. I mean, it you again, we could sit here and talk about it for hours. I mean, there's, you know, and the best part of like digging into the schedule conversation is like us talking right now, you could send me everything that you guys have policy wise or data wise or anything that convinced your department to do it. And I could utilize that here and present it and say, hey, I now have more information, or I have data or research, or these are like seven different departments that just tried it and they love it and it was 100% vote to do it, So being able to interact with other firefighters that are on that schedule, I think that's really how you build your case, and then you pitch it, and and then you hear of how departments do it differently. So 4896, like first day, we're knocking out station duties, we're knocking out everything we need to, we're training. Second day, you can sleep in a little bit if we're busy, or everybody's getting up at 7, we're having breakfast, we're doing PT, or we're just going to do what we do. Like, tones go off, we're going. If not, it's your day. Like, so trying to see how departments handle that down to the details of the 48, the first shift, second shift, that's huge too. I've heard of departments rotating. So like if you're on the 48 or the first day of your 48, you're at your station, you're busy. Well, that second day, you're flipping with a station that's, less busy. Or maybe it's just for half of a shift so that you can get your rest and recovery, because the burnout is real. Like,
Yes, it
it is
is.
so real. And sometimes I know I've fallen guilty to it, but like I never really knew I was burnt out until things at home are not going so smooth, or like my family is noticing things, or I just have no motivation. Like, it happens, but that's a combination of, you're at the station for 24 hours, you're there. You can't, obviously emergencies, things like that, but like you're not just leaving. You don't have the freedom to just like go take a run down the street, go run for 30 minutes. Like, you're confined to your station, to your company, to your crew, to your shift. So there's a lot that goes into it, but yeah, I think I'm really curious to research the 2472 and how that would work with a department of our size, and also the 1323, because I think there's not enough information right now to make a case to at least to Savannah. But that's something that's kind of like on my list right now, that once things settle down, and I kind of get some time to like really dig in, I want to know all about it, and see what happens, share it, and maybe rally the troops, and we'll see.
Okay. All right. Love it. Love it. Like I said, just discussions. But I seriously, I appreciate you coming on, talking shop, and I thoroughly enjoy this.
Thank you, Danny. Yeah, I did too. And like I said, just let me know if there's anything, love to chat with you, get to know you more, and yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yep, no problem. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.